gallons of oil is still in the Gulf of Mexico.
Antonia, I wanted you to respond to the New York Times editorial board responding to the settlement with BP deal will lead to a cleaner Gulf headline. They wrote, even before the settlement, BP's costs have not been trivial. When all is said and done, the company estimates it'll have paid nearly $54 billion, shedding major assets to pay the tab. If that isn't a deterrent to careless behavior by the oil companies, it's hard to know what is. Can you respond to that finally?
Yeah. Again, it's a lot of money. It's the largest oil spill, offshore drilling oil spill in world history. So BP has been estimating all along the costs associated with this disaster. They had already put estimated $43 billion, so put aside a $43 billion cost. This puts it to about $53 billion. But that's even less than analysts were predicting the costs would be for the spill. So back in 2011, Moody's estimated $60 billion. This is coming in.
Yeah. We have to leave it there, and I want to thank you very much for joining us, Antonia Yuhas. We will link to your pieces, also the author of Black Tide. That does it for the show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh, our website, democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with guest host Lisa Loving. Today's guest is former Voices from the Edge co-host Alan Graf, author of I Inhaled, Rantings, Ramblings, and Ravings of a Hippie Lawyer.
Hi, this is John Schuck, host of Religion for Life. Alex McNeil is the executive director for More Like Presbyterians, an LGBTQ advocacy group in the Presbyterian Church USA. Alex is the first openly transgender leader of any organization in a mainline denomination, and he talks with me about next steps for LGBTQ justice in the church. Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 12th annual PDX Pop Now Festival, July 24th through 26th at Audio Cinema in Portland. PDX Pop Now includes a record fair, street fair, and two outdoor stages with performers such as Amber Moon, Blue Cranes, Long Knife, Mike Crenshaw, Nurses, The Stops, and many more. That's PDX Pop Now, July 24th through 26th at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm a loving the old lion, a winner without fail.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the PDX Leo Party, Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian. A birthday celebration for all you Portland Leos with special performances from Sleep of Old Dominion and the Chicharrones, Mike Crenshaw, Smoke M2D6, and many more. Again, that's the PDX Leo Party on Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian, located at 426 Southwest Washington Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's 8:03 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, sitting in for Joanne today. And what an amazing treat we have. We're speaking with Alan Graf. He's been working on his memoir, I Inhaled, Rantings, ramblings and ravings of a hippie lawyer for a long time, and here it is out. He's going to be reading from the published book, and he's going to play his banjo tonight at 7 p.m. at the St. John's Bookstore, which is on North Lombard Street. Alan, you're here. This is where you started, man.
Oh, my God. I'm, like, totally freaked out. But, hey, Portland, I love you. You're so great. I'm so glad to be back. It's just amazing. And what the hell happened to the city? 10 years. You know what? I nearly didn't make it to KBOO this morning because the traffic was so congested. I started thinking I was in the Bay Area. And I was like, wow, this is like crazy. Hey, I spent 19 years in this city trying to make it saner. And I come back and, it's a little crazy.
Hey, listeners, there are going to be people that don't know who Alan Graf is. And I have to tell you right now, he was...
Sometimes I wonder who that is myself.
Yeah, it's the human condition. Alan Graf is the people's attorney who won an historic settlement with the city of Portland over police violence at a May Day march in 2002. Also, he helped found this show, Voices from the Edge. And... Alan, we were just talking about some of the themes of I Inhaled, which is fascinating because now everybody can inhale because it's legal. But what you're really looking at is issues of mental health and urban life where we create these gentrified zones that, I mean, are we making ourselves crazy? So talk about the book. What's in there? What's going on?
Well, it's, you know, at one hand, you could look at it as just an old guy's stories, and that's me. You know, I just turned 65. And, you know, I've been a civil rights lawyer for, I don't know, 20 years, and mental health and Social Security, doing that sort of stuff, always working for the small guy or woman against the big corporation and government. And that's been kind of like my MO for years. And I started out, you know, as a kid feeling like I was an activist. I was kind of, you know, born thinking, hey, things are kind of messed up here. And, you know, so the book really, you know, at a deeper level, I would like to think is about consciousness, is about sanity, is about trying to live a sane life. And I was even talking to my wife this morning about, you know, if I'm going to go out there and promote sanity, I better be sane myself. And, you know, one of the best, you know, criteria for sanity is figuring out self-realization, being really honest with yourself. And like, you know, I'm just thinking about my own life the past couple of weeks. I got into it with somebody who really pissed me off. And my first reaction was, I want to get back at that guy. I want to screw them. And, you know, I want to show them how much pain I was. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. And the filters came in, you know, the ethical filters, whatever part of me said, well, wait, that's, what are you going to prove by that? Are you making connections? Are you doing something better? And I thought, I got to connect with that person. I got to, like, make some effort. And, you know, I always said one of my philosophies was flood them with kindness. And if that doesn't work, kick their ass. And that's usually more towards government and the police. And that's, you know, I've been doing that for years. And you got to... So, you know, Portland, it's amazing town. I love this town. I love everybody in here. Not everybody, but a lot of folks. And, you know, it's got really crowded. And, you know, it's the same pattern you see. I mean, you know, even parts of Portland like Hawthorne, and you look at New York City, Soho, and all those really creative spots at the Art Village. You know, I'm an old East Village guy from back in the 60s. When all the hippies first moved in, and it was right after Ginsberg and Kerouac and Allen.
Allen Ginsberg.
Yeah, Allen Ginsberg, you know, all lived there, all the Beats. And then the hippies moved in. It was just a really cool place. It was a really creative place. And then all the speed freaks moved in, and the rich people decided they wanted a piece of that creativity, so they bought it all up, and all the poor artists fled. And that's kind of what happened down in Hawthorne and somewhat in Belmont, and now all of Portland. Portland, you know, it's
Alberta Street.
Yeah,
wow.
Alberta Street. I haven't seen that yet, but I'm scared to go look. But it's kind of interesting, and it gets to gets to that definition of sanity. And I mean, there's so many things interconnected. My mind, as a lawyer, I'm supposed to be logical, but yet, you know, being an old acid freak, I'm tangential as hell. And you know, and that's how my book is. That's why I called it Rantings, Ramblings, and Ravings of Hippie Lawyer. And some people just hated the book. They're like, it's not logical, man. You don't go from the beginning, from when you were born to when you you're not dead yet. Oh, that's right. And you know, it's all over the place. So I was like, exactly. But there's actually a theme. It's about sanity. How do you measure sanity? You know, there's an old thing about the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Do you know about that, Lisa? Okay, Heisenberg was this cool physicist, and he found out that when they measured subatomic particles, the smallest particle known to physics, that whoever did the measuring, they got a different result each time. And you take that theory and you think about the measurer is part of the results of the measurement. Who's ever doing the judging, who's ever doing the measuring, is inherently biased. We all are. There's no such thing as objectivity, you know, ultimately. And then, so when we come to sanity, what is sanity anyway? I mean, let me just read a little part of my book. You know, I'm pushing my book. And by the way, I just want to tell you, I have no goal to make money on my book. It's a total losing proposition monetarily. But what I wrote it about, and what I'm hoping is, it's that it's just a way of raising consciousness, you know, a way of thinking to where you connect all the dots.
Okay, and we do have two callers. So read your read, and then we'll go to the callers.
Well, I'm just sort of focusing on mental illness. And here's a little, apart from my book, it's called The Mentally Ill in Prisons. One day I went to a prison to represent a mentally ill prisoner. That prisoner had done the most intolerable thing imaginable. He used street drugs. I tried to get the government to grant my guy Social Security benefits that would help him out when he got out of prison, so he didn't end up back in again. For you see, my client was severely mentally ill, hallucinating, hearing voices, talking to inanimate objects, the full nine yards, and that was without using any street drugs. He is bipolar on the natch. But the government does not pay drug users, abusers anymore. There is a moral position out there about certain types of drug use. Some people think if you choose to do it, you should bear the fruits of your own stupidity. That's a simple approach for the simple mind. I'm reminded of a headline in the newspapers, this is years ago, about Kurt Cobain's death. Drug use kills rock star. When I saw the headline, I wondered at the time if it could be that simple. It's so easy to characterize the problems of our young people as simply due to drug use, so we don't have to dive too deep into our own psyches to understand the hopelessness of youth and the despair that some of them feel when they're taught to believe that there is nothing they can do to change a society bent on self-destruction. The result of that hopelessness is that happens, sometimes bad,
Squeak, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The hearing was held at Special Offenders Unit in Monroe, Washington. The Special Offenders Unit's a prison where they place unimaginable, unmanageable prisoners to stabilize, to make them manageable so they can be placed in the general population. And on the way to the mental hearing, I drove up I-5 into the insanity they call Seattle, now Portland. I wondered if the folks that live there fit the definition of being mentally ill for subjecting themselves to the monstrosity of living like lemmings while breathing poison air created by their own infernal combustion engines. So there's a little part of my book.
Hey, we got a full slate of callers.
And let's just, I just want to tell people, I'm going to be at St. John's Bookstore tonight. It's on Lombard, and the address is
8622 North Lombard Street. That's tonight at 7 p.m. St. John's Bookstore, a wonderful, independent, historic community institution.
Yeah, and here, this is what makes Portland beautiful. This is what I love about Portland, this kind of bookstore. You know, come down to the bookstore. If you don't come tonight, coming tonight. They're actually going to go into repairs for a couple of weeks starting, I think, Sunday or Monday. So if you come down tonight, and I don't even care if you buy my book, buy 10 books from them. This, they really need your help and support. This is what keeps this town great. This is the way, at least through your pocketbook, you can keep this place sane. Or come down and meet with me and you know, and we'll have a cool time.
We are, if you missed the very beginning, we're speaking with Alan Graf. He's published his memoir, I Inhaled, Rantings, Ramblings, and Ravings of a Hippie Lawyer. And, you know, if you don't know who he is, he's an extremely controversial people's attorney who won an historic settlement with the city of Portland over police violence in 2002 at the May Day March. He also spent years as, I want to say, a Social Security disability lawyer.
Still so do that.
He knows a little bit about people trying to get access to the services that they need. Let's go to the phone lines. What's going on out there? Edie's out there. What's going on, Edie?
Alan, I have to be on the phone and give you some loving first thing in the morning. I think you're awesome. I have been so grateful to you. You have done so much good that you probably have no idea how far-reaching it is, and I wanted to give you a little hint of the iceberg. May I?
Ah, well, let me kiss back to you, and thank you so much.
No, she wants to tell you something, man.
Oh,
zip
okay.
it. Come on. He talks a lot.
All right.
This is my brother.
This is my coffee.
And he talks a lot.
Okay,
but go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
So I have several people who I love and care for who have been brutalized by police and terrorized. You have given them hope and sanity where they could have had despair and bitterness or revenge. I know many people that I'm caring for or neighbors or whatever. Who should be on SSI or are, but are having all kinds of problems and difficulties getting on it or having or keeping it or whatever it is. And the fact that there have been some decent, courageous, principled, compassionate people like you have given us hope and have also made precedents to make it easier for those who need some justice get justice. So I want to thank you for that. Also, you had talked about going up to Seattle for the WGO protest and having a teach-in and bringing your son up. You were talking about these awesome teach-in activities, so you persuaded me to change my weekend schedule, cram my kids into a car, and zip up to Seattle.
Talk about historic events, the big public rejection of the World Trade Association organization up there in Seattle. That was amazing.
Yeah, that's so in that, my... Go ahead.
We missed the teach-in because I had some bizarre car repair things at the last minute. However, that profoundly changed some of us. My little preschooler in the bright orange-yellow vest. Oh, my kids are still there, so I haven't reflected. They will always know there's a little kid here, so you'll be safe. Oh, mother, how embarrassing.
All right, Edie, is there anything else? We got a full slate of callers. What else
she
is going?
She became a political science major and is doing much on her world passion to end mass incarceration and to bring in funding matching the wealthy with the people who want to change things, partly because of what she saw at WTO because of what you said. And my son has been an activist for a long time, and my middle child wants to marry a rich Republican to bail me out of jail. You have helped us. Thank you so
All
much.
Right, Edie. Thank you so much for coming. Hey, for people, again, people maybe who just showed up and they don't know what happened in Seattle. What year was that? Was it 2000?
1999.
So the World Trade Organization was meeting in Seattle. And actually, we had many friends that were part of the labor movement who went up there with their families because there were going to be events and stop making that noise with the book, okay? And so there were thousands of families up there with kids, little kids, and basically the Seattle police turned on the crowd and turned it into a gigantic riot. And the scandal that fallout from that toppled the chief of police and all kinds of things. But it really was shocking that there were so many kids there. It was supposed to be a peaceable thing. And specifically, the Seattle police turned it into a riot. But no, let's get through the... So let's go through the... some of these callers, and then we'll go back, and he's got a part of his book is about the World Trade Organization.
Whose streets, our streets.
There you go. And by the way, you really probably, you know, anyone who's interested in this, he is, Alan's speaking tonight at St. John's Books at 7 p.m. You could get a copy of the book there. You should consider.
What's the address there?
8622 North Lombard Street. But if you just go to St. John's, it's right there in the heart of that beautiful little gem. So let's go to the phone lines. Mena's on the line. Mena, what's going on?
Hi, I'm Nana Rado from St. John's Books and calling to say good morning to Alan.
Nana!
I'm going to be here in less than 12 hours. Hey!
Yes. Thank you so much. I'm so honored that you're going to have me down there at your bookstore. And as I was saying to Lisa, your bookstore, you know, and mom and pop kind of stores like that are really the heart and soul of Portland. And you know, I'm just, just really looking forward to seeing it. And that's where the revolution is, where people can buy books that, you know, help you think critically. And people should come down there tonight and every night and support your bookstore.
Let's let Mena talk.
Yeah.
My brother talks a lot. He does. And we never see him. And so we get together and it's we're all talking over each other. Mena, what is your vision for your bookstore, your small independent bookstore? And what are some of the obstacles you're facing in keeping your doors open, honey?
Well, my vision for the bookstore has always been to be a neighborhood gathering place, a welcoming space where writers and readers can meet either, you know, through the pages or in person. And, you know, to an extent I succeed, always on a tight, tight budget. You know, that's always a battle. Biggest obstacle right now is a chunk of our facade fell off a few weeks ago. My landlord is required by the city to fix it, and that process is going to start in a few days, and we're going to be closed, which means no business for at least 2 weeks, which is a little frightening.
Okay. So if people come down there tonight, they can learn more about how they can support your business, right?
Absolutely. Mine and, you know, all of St. John's. We're a neighborhood on the move. We're changing rapidly, and, you know, the people who support our businesses are the people who are going to define how this neighborhood looks in the future. Hello, St. John's listeners.
Wow. All right, Mina. Thank you. I just want to thank you again for calling. And what Mina's talking about also kind of goes back to what Alan was talking about. Well, how do we create a city or a community that helps us as we're trying to figure out how to keep our heads above water? And this issue of, when you said something about, you know, you were talking to someone and you felt a sudden rage and you wanted to, I feel that too. And I wonder where it comes from, because that's not normal, I don't think. And it's places like our wonderful, I mean, I just think books and bookstores, that's part of the world that keeps our feet on the ground, as opposed to everybody's looking in the palm of their hand at some box that's maybe kind of spewing hate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, I woke up this morning thinking about, well, what was, I'm going to be actually on KBOO tonight. I'm actually talking to a bunch of lawyers at lunchtime. I was thinking, well, what's my theme? What is my theme here? My theme here is sanity. What is sanity? What's mental illness? And really, that's kind of what I've been sort of pushing for years, is like, we've got to get to a higher level of sanity. What do we know what sanity is? You know, when I was, you know, a hippie back in, and I'm still a hippie, but, you know, back in the 19, 20 formative years, I was thinking about how screwed up our society was. This was the society that was killing people in Vietnam. This was a society that was still, you know, discriminating against African Americans. We still do, but it was even greater back then. This was a crazy society that defined mental illness. So how does a crazy society, you know, define mental illness? Is it being normal? Is it fitting in like a cog? Well, you know, I thought about driving here. What is a really good example of the highest level of sanity? It's the people in Charleston, South Carolina, who forgave completely that guy who killed their relatives. That's unbelievable to me, because I don't know if I'm even capable of that level of forgiveness. But that level of love and forgiveness, and I'm not saying it's, you know, some people might say, oh, that's passive, they should have sought revenge. That kind of love and that kind of forgiveness is the kind of thing that's going to help humanity move to the next level, even survive. Because right now, we're genetically, in some ways, messed up in terms of our consciousness. We do so many, you know, weird and crazy things. And again, judging people who are insane, some of the insanest people, like William Blake and Picasso, were some of the greatest, you know, artists of our time. And so,
And I also wanted to say about that, as we're talking about sanity, one of the issues that I hear from other people out there is, how come if a shooter's white, he's mentally ill, but if he's African American or Muslim, he's a terrorist or a criminal? And so these issues of how we define what sanity is really important. So let's go to the phone lines.
Yeah.
Joanne's on the line. What's going on?
Oh, yes. Hello. I'm one of those many wronged people that had to take this social security disability. I'm being mentally ill and not on my physical and mental problems. And Joanne Hardesty doesn't think I'm mentally ill. And anyway, I guess Lisa and Joanne and others will be writing their books too. It must feel good to be that powerful.
Joanne, that's an interesting point that she puts out there too, is like, how do we even judge the people that we speak with all the time in our everyday life? And how this issue about the power of the book thing, actually, Joanne, I'm just gonna say to you, it's scary, and I'm not sure if I'm gonna I feel, I don't know, it's more like climbing a mountain for me personally and less like going through a slip and slide to the bank or something like that. And, you know, Joanne, I really value our caller, Joanne, who always has her finger on the pulse, in my opinion, and puts important issues on the table. And it, I can sense that it's sometimes difficult to feel. I feel that she feels not respected as she goes about her daily life. And the other right. thing is how, as we are trying to, I know I meet so many people that I think are driven insane by life on earth, period. People in my family specifically, right? Survivors of sexual violence that, it does something to you and you can get help and you can get therapy, but it doesn't always work. And then if you like accept the fact that you realize that maybe you've got an unstable platform in some way, like Joanne does, it's, openly, it's hard to sometimes figure out where, you know, where you fit. And it's hard to figure out how people should or shouldn't be reacting to you. I just have to say, I really respect Joanne, the caller that calls.
Yeah. I've been psychotic myself. I've gone through, you know, drug-induced psychosis. I've been severely depressed. I've gone through periods of my life where I even felt suicidal. You know, so I've been mentally, myself, been through the gamut of a lot of stuff. But I also understand, you know, the frustration of people who feel just, you know, trampled upon, have been victimized, and don't feel like they have any power to climb out of that. And I don't feel like I have any power either sometimes. I feel like I'm totally, at times, completely powerless to change the craziness around me. And I know a lot of people feel that too, you know. And so, but I'm not going to give up. You know, I'm from a Holocaust family, and I think about the people in the ghettos, you know, there who, you know, fought against the Nazis, who were fighting against all hope, but continue the fight. And, you know, so it's a matter of, you know, we just got to keep trying to do our best. I mean, it does sometimes look pretty crazy environmentally. You know, we're screwing the planet and we still got a long way to go. But sometimes good stuff happened. We had two good Supreme Court decisions recently, which show, you know, step forward, step backwards. And so, Joanne, I hear you. And I'm glad that you called. And so you have at least an outlet on this program to express yourself.
I'm always glad when Joanne
calls.
That's
good.
I also want to come out right now and give the Portland and Multnomah County Crisis Line number if anyone is feeling suicidal. This is a 24/7 hotline, and I want to give that to you right now. Anyone who's feeling suicidal, anyone in your family who's feeling suicidal, please get our friends and family help. And 1-800-716-9769. Okay. This is a thing I just want to take seriously. We do have a couple callers, but Alan wants to read some more.
Yeah. Well, I'm here to promote my book. So let me just read you a little bit, just give you a feel for what it is. Somebody talked about Seattle before. I just want to read sort of a little excerpt from my chapter, Whose Streets, Our Streets. I was up there in Seattle with my 15-year-old son. It was the revolution in the streets. You might never see anything like it again. It brought back memories for me of the Vietnam War and the marches in Washington. It brought back memories of breathing concrete as the tear gas canisters flew from the tops of buildings while Abbie Hoffman tried to ram open the door to the State Department. I'm so glad I took my son. It's planted a seed in his heart and the soul that will flower. In Seattle, I don't think we had National Lawyers Guild observers. In Seattle, I don't think the observers made any difference in terms of influencing cop behavior. Because the cops lost control.
Yeah.
What I mean by the term lost control is they lost control over their emotions and restraint, besides losing control over the streets and the city. They did everything historically that would merit the term pig. Well, they didn't shoot anyone, but that was because most of the protesters were white. I suspect if the majority of the folks were black, they would have been bloodshed Watts style. So anyway, I talk about the whole issue there and just give you a little feel for some of the stuff in my book.
Friends, we are live in the studio with Alan Graf. He's published his memoir. He just read a little. I Inhaled, Rantings, Ramblings and Ravings of a Hippie Lawyer. He's reading from the book tonight, and he's also going to play his banjo at 7 p.m. at the St. John's Bookstore. That's at 8622 North Lombard Street. And let's go back to the phone lines. These lines are lighting up. People have things to say about this. And I think that you're touching a nerve. So let's see if we can get someone on the phone. I can see that the magical engineering pixie's got like four arms and he's just moving them all right now. So we're going to the phone line. We have James on the line. James, what's going on?
Alan was talking about the definition of sanity, and, you know, and I'm just kind of taking a piece of what Cornel West was saying. I read this quote of his, and he talks about being well adjusted to discrimination. And I think that maybe, like, sanity, as far as our culture here in America would term it, is being well adjusted to the colonial institution and all the things that follow it. You know, white supremacy, heteronormativity. I feel like it's one of those things where, you know, it's like, but if you start rebelling against it and what they've set for you, then you're insane.
Exactly.
If you start rubbing against that grain, if you start trying to think outside of that box that has been laid down by our founding fathers in the 13 original colonies, you're insane.
Hey, James, I want to ask you something. Do you have something that you do to keep yourself together? Do you have anything that you do to cope? Because I know that a lot of people listening, maybe this is something that we should share too.
Well, I have my music. I was talking to Joanne about it a few weeks ago. When I teach guitar lessons, specifically I teach blues. And I infuse my blues lessons with Black history, because I don't care what anybody in this town says. I don't care how many other people, including me, because I'm a Mexican kid, man. I don't care who else picks up the guitar in the name of blues. Blues is Black music. And the stories that are included in blues are essential to Black history. And so when I teach blues, I tell people about, you know, I teach people about, you know, the history of slavery in America. And I teach them why slave haulers became gospel, why gospel became blues, and, you know, and all of the things that fall into that category. And I feel like that keeps me really sane, because I've taken something that I love and I've infused it with a social, I guess you'd say, social justice.
Awesome, James. I just want to thank you for calling. We have a full slate of callers, so I'm just going to try to keep edging the show, but you're awesome and I hope you call again. And I think that that's a really important point. I want to say something random about that too.
Okay.
A lot of people don't realize that flamenco music is a contemporary of the blues, and it actually has the same elements, but from the other side of the world. So when you're looking for music that speaks to you, you're looking for music about oppression, you should check out flamenco music. And we do have a couple other callers.
Let me see if I can get a word in edgewise here. I think music is part of the sane expression,
yes,
of the mind.
James,
I've dragged my guitar and now my banjo with me wherever I go, because that's where we're communicating at the highest levels. You know, we play music for each other and to each other. We're talking at the highest level where there's no hate, but there's, you know, we can tap into the deepest emotions. And I think that's, you know, I mean, that's why I bring my instrument with me, because I feel like I can communicate that way. And also, I just wanted to say I've gotten into Appalachian music, and Lisa talks about flamenco music, but Appalachian music is really poor people's music. It's music that's not corporatized, and bluegrass and old time, they call old time music, which is a fiddle and banjo, have roots. It's interesting. The roots of that are out of blues, but also the banjo is an African instrument. It was brought over by the slaves, and then they played for their masters, and some of the masters were Irish and Celtic, and so they started playing with their slaves. So the first actual Appalachian music is the slave playing his banjo with his plantation owner playing fiddle. And that was actually the first bands that developed. It was interesting, although they had this horrible relationship where somebody owned somebody else.
Not exactly a relationship, but I hear what you're
saying. but you know, at the same time, you can actually read stories about like concentration camps where there were actually positive relationships between the guards and the people who were the prisoners. In the same way, there was this sometimes, you know, a thing that happened where a slave owner who was playing fiddle would play with a black banjo player, and out of that developed old-time music into bluegrass and actually country. So country music, which appears abominably totally white, and sometimes I wonder, I'm sorry, why anybody would listen to it. I hope I didn't offend anybody out there, but I do like Willie. It has, you know, black roots. And so that's why I've gotten into some of the Appalachian music. It's very uncorporatized, and it's very still indigenous. And I appreciate what you said. And music is, you know, is love.
I want to say this about that, too. Some of these communities of people in Appalachia, some of these are mixed race communities, the Melungeon communities, people who escaped from enslavement and other things. They basically came up into these mountains, and Scottish immigrants, especially Scottish people from the Highlands who already lived up there, some of those Appalachian people, those are multiracial communities who hid from the Civil War because they didn't support any side. So I had to say that too. Let's get a couple callers, and then we're going to play the banjo, because this is, it's exciting when so many people are energized to call, but we want to, let's give it 5 minutes, and then we'll pull out the Joe box. Can we call it a Joe box?
You can call it whatever you like.
I think we have Jake on the
phone. Sounds like a banjo joke in the works.
is Jake on the phone?
Yes, I'm on the phone.
What's going on, man?
Well, I'm an elder in the tribe here, and you guys got me going because I music is our blessing, you know, and we come together in our hearts with each other. I'm 74, and I'm with around a lot of 20-year-olds, and we're standing there connecting from our hearts because of the music. So I relate to music as a blessing. But what I want to talk, the other thing I want to say real briefly is about sanity and just the way they serve that to us. And we call, oh, gee, that person's insane. Well, that's just the opposite of what's really happening. They're really out of sane, because if we were insane, that would be okay, I think. We'd be insanity. Mm-hmm. But we're out of sanity. Just want to point that out, a little thing that how they just turn them words around, you know, a little bit.
This
should be called out of sanity.
All right, Jake.
Thank
you so much for calling, Jake.
Something we can yap about.
Right on.
Bless your hearts. Everything's going excellent. Let's just keep healing this place.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Jake. Hey, if you just tuned in, we're live with Alan Graf. He's the people's lawyer who won an historic settlement with the city of Portland over police brutality at a 2002 May Day march. He is a social security lawyer who helps people get disability, and he helped found this show. Okay?
And let me just make one correction. It wasn't a May Day march. It was actually George Bush was visiting Portland to do a fundraiser for Gordon Smith, and there were thousands of people out in the street. And in 2003, the Iraq War started, and it was huge protests, and it was those two protests combined with the police, had police riots and treated the crowd with incredible brutality and disrespect. Those were the actual, the substance of
including
the lawsuits.
Including children, I believe, if I'm...
Children were pepper
infant,
sprayed.
Perhaps, yeah.
And shot with rubber bullets.
Mm-hmm. And he's going to be reading from his published memoir, I Inhaled, Rantings, Ramblings, and Ravings of a Hippie Lawyer, tonight at 7 p.m. at the St. John's Bookstore, 8622 North Lombard Street. And we're going to go back to the phone lines and see. We have Francis on the phone. Francis, what's going on?
Hey, it's nice to hear Alan's voice. It's been a long time.
Hi, Francis.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
I'm excited to come to that book, your
the banjo tonight. Show, the banjos and books and banjos.
Right. I'm excited to come.
I tell you what, if you come, I'm going to give you a book. Okay.
Okay.
Right on, Francis.
That would be nice. But I just wanted to say hi and glad you're back. And have you said you haven't been to Alberta Street yet?
I haven't. Should I go?
Okay, just wait. well, you know,
I live there.
Remember all of the nefarious things that were going on, the drug-free zones and the chronic nuisance ordinances and
right,
all that?
Right.
Well, they were pretty successful, I think, in clearing out a lot of people in this gentrification process.
Mm.
And I don't know about you, but when you go on to Mississippi Avenue and Alberta Avenue, it's quite delightful now, but what used to be there is not there anymore.
Mm.
So...
meaning families.
I don't know how you'll accept it, but It was kind of heartbreaking for me the first time I went over to Mississippi Avenue.
Frances, can I ask you something?
Sure, go ahead.
How do you cope with the stress that we're talking about in these in our cities here that are gentrifying? And like I was saying,
like when one of my friends, best friends, was murdered by the police.
Yes, yes, that is what I mean.
You know, and there, but for the grace of God, went my son.
Yeah. How do you cope?
I think what Alan said earlier, the people that forgave that young man in South Carolina, that is one of the highest levels of sanity, and I think that's how a lot of people cope.
Yeah.
You have to forgive. And it's the whole thing about understanding that everyone has shoes that they walk in and nobody can judge other people. And as for me, I believe in the human spirit, and I believe that we'll figure this out.
Wow.
That's the only way that I maintain my sanity is, and walking is good, but and I'm constantly thinking about why someone does what they do, especially if it seems to be hateful and wrong. And I think that whole notion of truth and reconciliation, once we get that figured out and start doing it here, to really make reparations for all the wrongs that have been done, and to genuinely make concerted efforts to reparate, to make better the lives of people that have been destroyed by racist behaviors, that'll make a difference.
All right.
But, yeah, does that make sense to you?
It, coming
and
from
music,
you, that means
I agree,
a lot.
Music helps everybody.
All right.
So, all right.
Thanks, Frances.
And I hope to see you tonight, Alan.
Thank you. Thank
Always
you so much. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Two things, you know, for me, music has been a healing force, and humor is another thing. My mother taught me that. My mother was the ultimate Billy Crystal in female form. She was just, a jokester, and helped me see the absurdity. You know, when you say stuff that's just absurd, everybody kind of laughs. Everything sort of comes together when you point out how crazy something is. And so that's another way I handle the craziness, by joking about it. Sometimes people think I'm just being a little bit superficial, but I'm just trying to, you know, figure out where there's a piece of love and something that has a lot of hate to it.
Wow. You know what? Let's go to the one more caller and then play some music. Is that okay? Who have we got in the line? Mike is on the line. Mike, what's going on with you today?
Yeah. Yeah, just a good segue into the nice music. The truth is, the banjo wouldn't have been brought over as a physical instrument, except in the hearts and minds of black men and women that were brought over as slaves. Except for the banjo, it was found as a business venture. The captains realized, the owners realized, that the survival rate was a little better if there was a banjo on board. And that's all I have to say about that. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Hit it, Alan. I'm feeling kind of sad now.
Well, actually, I'll play a sad song.
Okay.
This is, the banjo I'm playing is called a open back banjo, and there's a lot of different styles of banjo, but the banjo that the African Americans played and later passed on to white folks is called clawhammer banjo or frailing. And its reason it's called clawhammer is when people would work all day in the fields, they couldn't really use their fingers all that much. They'd been, you know, grabbing hoes and digging and stuff like that, and so they would just take their banjo and kind of hit it like a hammer, and they'd hold the hand in the shape of a claw, and that's where clawhammer came about. So I'm going to do a tune that the Carter family, who supposedly are credited for the originators of country music, found. The Carter family were really the greatest plagiarists of all time. They went around to all these...
steal like an artist.
Yeah. They went around to all these mountain families, took their songs, and then recorded them and made them famous. But of course, they never said they wrote them, which is good. At least they weren't total plagiarists. They were honest plagiarists. Anyway, this is an old Cardiff family tune. I'll just play you a little bit of it, and you'll kind of get the idea of the sound of the banjo.
He's our guest today. He's going to be reading from his memoir, I Inhaled, Rantings, Ramblings, and Ravings of a Hippie Lawyer, tonight, and playing that banjo at 7 p.m. at the St. John's Bookstore, 8622 North Lombard Street. You know, Alan is my brother Alan is an extremely controversial guy. He's actually made some people in this town really very angry in many different ways. But I feel like when you look at the people we know who have built our lives around trying to make the world a better place, kind of, it's hard to figure out how to, I don't know, keep your wits about you. I guess keep your sanity, and that's what we're talking about. It really resonated, Alan, with me when you said that you're really angry, something happened and you just became enraged, and then you stopped and said, why am I so enraged? And the same thing happens to me all the time, and it's not just when I'm reading a newspaper either, right? I read The Oregonian every day online, and sometimes I just start putting those reader comments there too, and then I think, what are you doing? You know, why is what? So what, Lisa Loving, you know, what do you do to cope? I still haven't really found that thing, to be honest with you, Alan.
Yeah.
I haven't found that thing.
I understand that. And, you know, I just know that sanity is choices. It's choices. We do have choices. We have choices sometimes to get beyond whatever it is that makes us angry. For me, I know a lot of my anger comes from, you know, being part of a Holocaust family. My grandparents, my grandmother, let me give her name, Leah Graf, was gassed at Auschwitz. My grandfather, Simon Graf, was shot by firing squad because he was a Jew with a gun. He had a loaded pistol when the Nazis came for him in the middle of the night, and they didn't like that, and a few days later they shot him by firing squad. And my dad came over here in 1939 and then went back and joined the Air Force and fought over there. So that, all of those things, you know, reside in me and make me angry. It's part of my almost genetic structure. When I see any sort of abuse or intolerance or discrimination or hate, yes, I get hateful against hate. And then, but I realize, you know, I mean, I, don't get me started on another topic, Israel. We have a lot of mixed feelings about that, and how the Jews have handled the legacy of the Holocaust, of the Shoah. And you keep that anger. If you keep that anger going, you know, then it destroys yourself and as it destroys other people around you. Two themes in my life have been, how do I change the system? How do I change things to make it better? One of them was, you know, as a lawyer, I've been fighting the system. I've still been doing that. I live, by the way, in Floyd, Virginia, which is in the Appalachian Mountains. And recently, I wanted to brag about the town there. We had a big, giant company come in and try to put in a fracking pipeline right through Floyd, which is this pristine county. And we fought it, and I helped out, and they found out about me. And we fought it, and we got them to at least move it to another county. Unfortunately, the other county is going to have to deal with it. But we did get them to move. You know, so I've been keeping up the fight. But the other part of the fight, you fight, and then the other part of you have to also heal and figure out how to love and make things better, because if you're constantly fighting, you become, it's just like when we fought the Nazis. We became like the Nazis. We fought the Nazis, and we brought over their, the CIA's basically was formed out of Nazi operatives.
Edward Teller.
That's how the CIA started, you know? That's how all the school, and by the way, let me put out a big shout. Oh, forgot him. I slipped his name. Oh, Edward Snowden, American hero. We should bring him home with like ticker tape parades, and you know, and thank him for being courageous enough to put another light on the big spy apparatus, the snooping, controlling, paternalistic, untrusting, cop-like apparatus that doesn't trust the people. You know, that's, it's become like that, and I. Living in the South, I end up defending Obama against racists because I'm kind of feel like he's my brother in a way. I defend him. On the other hand, I criticize the hell out of him for a lot of stuff he does. But ultimately, I realize he's the president of the military-industrial complex, and I can't expect him to be Ralph Nader. You know, he's stuck in a position. So anyway, Lisa's making faces at me. I know totally, she's going to...
You just put a lot in that sentence. I was like, you can't be Ralph Nader. I don't know what would happen if Obama turned into Ralph Nader. I'm really not sure
He wouldn't live another day, basically, what would happen. He'd have an accident. He'd fall down the stairs in the White House accidentally is what would happen. So, you know, keep your expectations realistic. I'm going for Bernie, of course. And we'll see what happens. But I don't have high expectations about putting my faith in one guy or one person to fix everything. Ultimately, it comes down to the only control you have. And you know this as a parent. I'm sitting across the table here at another parent. You know, even as raising kids, ultimately, the only control you have is of yourself. Yeah, I tell my kids are now in, you know, approaching 40s. I have one 30 and 40. Like, I wouldn't do that. Yes, Dad, sure, anything you say. You know, people, you just got to live by example. And when people get in line, you know, fight like mad to try to make it better.
And listeners, we are live in the studio with Alan Graf, Troublemaker Supreme. Let's just call him that. He's published his memoir, and he's going to be reading from it tonight and playing his banjo at 7 p.m. at the St. John's Bookstore, 8622 North Lombard Street. And it's funny, Alan, I haven't really thought that much in a long time about how many people I know, wonderful, intelligent, compassionate people, who are struggling with reality or even struggling with the desire to continue going here. There's a suicide epidemic on. There is. It's global. For real.
Well, one thing I want to say to all those people who are struggling with reality, you are probably the most sane people out there. If you're questioning reality, if you're questioning the craziness that's out there, you have a better handle on reality than the people in control, because those are the ones who are insane. So please don't check out, because we need you. You're smart. You're intelligent. You're aware. We need your voices. You know, if you can see what's happening, that's the first step in insanity, is to see it for what it is.
And listeners, we do have a few more minutes, 503-231-8187. If you've got questions for Alan or comments about Alan, really, you're one of those people that has been all over the place, Alan, even though you've struggled with your own demons. Do you know what I'm saying?
Still.
Yeah. And still. I'm just saying, and we're not necessarily, there's a threshold where people really have mental health problems that where they need help to deal with them. It's just that there's such a spectrum. And again, you know, my biggest worry is, you know, the person in my family who wanted to kill himself last week. Yes, there's a person in my family who wanted to kill himself last week. And what do you do?
I have one of those.
Yeah. And yeah. I'm at the phone to his mom and telling her, you got to do something. You can't just let it go. You can't pretend like it's not happening. And it's to me, that's the most remarkable thing at all. The global suicide rate. And it's interesting to me too, that statistically in this country, the people who kill themselves at the highest rate are white males, I believe, between the ages of 20 and 45 or something like that. And that's changing. Traditionally, African-American people did not kill themselves at the rate that they are now. And then let's talk one second about our brothers, sisters, family members who are military veterans from the Iraq and the Middle East wars.
Yeah.
I mean, how can we live as a society knowing that more soldiers killed themselves when they came home than died in the war? And that war's not over. Please don't joke with me about
and
that.
And that's one of the people I've represented over the years and been proud to is veterans. You know, and people say, well, what are you, as a hippie lawyer, what are you doing representing veterans?
They're us.
Hey, when the people say I support our troops, I think that means take care of people who have come back from the shock, you know, PTSD. I mean, just incredible stuff. And it's amazing. I mean, you know, Jay Bybee, who wrote the torture memos for Bush, well, he was appointed for a reward for writing the torture memos. Bush pointed him to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And then he was a judge in a case where I represented a Vietnam vet who had total PTSD. He saw his comrades skinned alive, and he was just horrible. And Jay Bybee wrote this opinion, tubing my client, saying the horrors that he saw were not long-lasting. Get over it, buddy. Now, you got to say for Jay Bybee, that's consistent, because he didn't believe torture would be long-lasting either. But, you know, it's interesting, and I feel really bad for Jay Bybee. His son committed suicide after he wrote the opinion for my veteran.
Okay.
And, you know, I think he's actually changed, you know, from that. I'm so sorry for him. And, boy, you know, when you start becoming judgmental, keep in mind it can hit home.
Even as a judge. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's see if we can get a couple more callers in. We got LJ. What's going on, LJ?
Hey, Lisa. How are you?
Great.
Good. Alan Graf. Golly, feelings of deja vu. Alan, when you left town, I believe you went back to the farm, right?
Yeah, I was on the farm for 5 years, and then I decided that particular community wasn't quite right a fit for me. I was I was too loud and obnoxious, and they basically told me to leave.
Okay, because I understand. Thanks to Kabu that the original founder of the farm, I don't know his name, but
Stephen Gaskin.
But he died, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he just died recently.
Yes.
And so maybe you want to fill in the younger folks what the original concept of the farm was.
Darn it, LJ, I wish you'd called sooner. Anyway, keep going.
Anyway, me too, Lisa, but Thursday is laundry day.
I can do it really quickly.
Let's let him take it away, and then we'll try to get in the last caller.
If you can give us a thumbnail.
Got it, LJ. Thanks a lot. Yeah, so he's going to do that, and then we're going to pull in the next caller. Go ahead.
Thumbnail, live the beliefs. Live the beliefs. It was a hippie saying, hey, we got all these ideals. We're criticizing the government, criticizing this. Let's live our beliefs. Let's get together in a rural community. Let's farm. Let's feed ourselves. Let's deliver our own babies. Let's school our own kids. Let's do it the way we want to do, as much out of the influence of crazy Western society as we possibly can. That was the theme of the farm. How did it work out? Well, it's still going, but it's quite different than when it used to be. And that would be the topic of another discussion. If Lisa ever wants to call me, I could go on for an hour about my perspective.
All right. We really only have a few minutes left, but I want to try to get in that last caller. Karen, what's going on with you today?
I just heard Alan on the radio. This is Karen Ewing. Hi.
Hey.
And wanted to say welcome back. And I sure wish I could be at your book signing tonight. Congratulations on that. And it's nice to hear you playing music, and all the best to you. And thanks for your insights on sanity and politics and all the other stuff. It helps to hear that.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you. Thanks, sweetheart.
It's true. I feel like I'm going to cry too now. And it was something about the music, because I've been looking at my ancestors and they're coming from that place. And then I just got back from Oklahoma last week and I spent time with my mom and my aunties and heard so many stories of the poverty and the death and the disease. I even have an uncle that disappeared and no one knows where he went. And he was a miner. And it's just like, how do we keep it together? I don't know. Just give us like a few last words before we have to close out this show, Alan. How should we cope?
Well, you know, I was just thinking when you just said that, there's this band out there that's composed of Israelis and Palestinians. And they play this beautiful music. They actually played at Carnegie Hall. I forgot their name. I ran into them online. But they're not allowed to play, you know,
in Israel.
In Israel. And so they meet like in other countries, in Switzerland and the U.S. And, you know, here's an example of how, you know, music can bring people together. It's this beautiful thing. And so, you know, that's one of the things I, you know, would just say is like, you know, when you're down and out, listen to some good music. Listen to blues. Cry your heart out. Laugh, scream, yell, tell jokes, you know, just be good to each other. There is some beauty and sanity in this world that we have to hold on to and grow and flourish and fertilize.
All right. I have to say special thanks to our guest, Alan Graf. Check him out tonight at the St. John's Bookstore, 7 p.m., 8622 North Lombard Street. Alan is currently wearing an I Survived the Portland Police t-shirt. Those are made by my colleague, Donovan Smith. Look up Donovan at ignorantreflections.bigcartel.com. This show will be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. Thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
Lisa rocks.
I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitters gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station.
Don't give up the fight.
In 1 hour at 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Then at 10:15, it's Flashpoints, today featuring a report on the Saudi air raid in Yemen that killed over 45 civilians and a look at how the U.S. continues to protect Israel's renegade nuclear weapons program, and more on how BP got off cheap for its massive and deadly Gulf Coast oil spill. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Leanne Krantz welcomes Walida Imarisha, co-editor and contributing author of Octavia's Brood, Science Fiction Stories and Social Justice Movements. And at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, host SW Concert speaks with veteran writer Kurt Busiek and up-and-coming artist Benjamin Dewey, who are two of the most prolific talents in Portland's comic scene. That's all coming up right after Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch with news you're not supposed to know, on for 1 hour today, up next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present The Harder They Come as part of the KBOO